Welcome to the Church of Mavis, everyone. We're back from the dead. First off, a few things before we get to our guest, John Vasquez, regarding the Fort Benning, Georgia, 1977 UFO experiences involving many troops. This tonight's show is entitled Alien Interference Experiment. I had some UFO sightings in Georgia, too. We've talked about those on the show. I'm not going to get into them now, but you've heard me talk about them in the past, so that definitely makes these stories a lot more eerie. There's definitely something going down in Georgia. And like I just said to John before we started, that I was poking fun at the devil went down to Georgia, that song. And definitely some truth in that. There's some weird stuff going down in Georgia. I posted up John's information, you know, for the show on Facebook, and several people came forward and said that they'd had stuff happen, too, around that area, Fort Benning. One guy, for instance, Robert Rister, he said, I have several relatives who have lived in the vicinity of Fort Benning for many years. Some of the alien experimenters obviously crossed the highway to the civilian section. Seriously, about that time, an aunt of mine went to the hospital to get treatment for burns when her whole house just electrified for no reason at all. So that spot is definitely Georgia altogether, I think. It's got some weird stuff going on down south. Yeehaw! But first off, let me just get to the guest coming up in the next few weeks, and then we'll start off with John. Next week, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Behind Every Wish Lurks the Djinn. She wrote a book with Philip Imbrogno. It comes out in March. The Vengeful Djinn, I believe, is the name of it. You can find it on my Facebook wall. And then the next show after that, at the end of the month, we have two more shows that we're going to do, one on Saturday, and then I just got off the phone with someone, and we're going to do a special show that last Sunday, I believe. But the 29th, I believe it is Micah Hanks and Nick Redfern for a show entitled Folk Devils, and that's basically going to be about strange cryptoid sightings like the Mothman, the Jersey Devil, and strange sightings, like there's some weird lizard man sighting, that these towns or civilizations have these strange sightings of these bizarre beings, and then suddenly it kind of issue forths this doomsday scenario, or bad things happen in the community after seeing these beings. So that show is going to be entitled Folk Devils. And then today I had a guest come up that I had to do a special Sunday show because there was no room on the schedule, because I schedule like a psychopath. And basically we just decided we'd do a special Sunday show with Nancy Redstar about the star people. And basically we've been talking about this last show and many other shows about the star people communicating with shamans and medicine men in pure, untainted form, unpolluted, without fear or negativity, which white folks like to add to that. And of course, that's not true, because tonight's story is kind of creepy, too, with aliens, so there is creepy stuff out there. There's also real positive stuff, so she's going to talk about that. She also introduced me to the Hopi Nation. They got some stuff going down at their reservations. It's like Hopi Armageddon between tribes over there. I mean, we may get them on a special show and talk about that and talk to their medicine man. It's still up in the air, but definitely Nancy Redstar is coming on the last Sunday of this month. We're going to talk about the star beings in a show entitled People from the Sky, and then I'll keep you up to date if we're going to do the other show. I'm not sure how that's going to go yet with the Hopi. Depends on what their medicine man has to say and if they're radio-friendly and into them. I don't even know if they've ever been on the radio. She told me it's hard to get natives on the radio, and she's like the only one we've ever had on the radio. And she's putting the word out to find some others, because I love talking to them and shamanism and that kind of stuff. All right, well, let's get to John. How you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, Jeff. How's things going?
Pretty good. Peachy? Just peachy?
Okay.
You there, guy?
Yep, I'm here.
I'm here, man.
Making sure everybody's here, ready to rock and roll. Let's start the questions. All right. Hey, John, I really want to know, in the beginning, what led you to join the military? How did it, what was the thing that brought you saying, hey, I'm going to join the military, and then you, of course, went into this scenario that turns into the Twilight Zone. I just want to know how it kind of started, really, for our audience to know.
Well, I started with my uncle and my dad. My dad was talking about him being in the service, Navy, and my uncle was also saying that, hey, the Army's much better, you know, one of those things, tug of war. Had to make a choice for myself, and I choose Army. I guess I'm the black sheep of the family. you know, that's how I go sometimes. But I went with my uncle. I went in the Army, went to Fort Leavenworth, Missouri, trained there in basic, and came back home to San Diego, and went on out to, 2 weeks. I went to go to a, what do you call it, a red flag out in Fort Irwin, which is in Barstow, California. It was a training course, and I was talking to my major, and I told him, listen, I want to stay in the service for a while, and he said, well, you know, just go to L.A. We'll send you to L.A. and sign up for the Army, and I did. They told me, listen, John, you're going to be going to Fort Benning, Georgia. So I went to Fort Benning, Georgia, and when I got there, that's when things started happening. Real weird, really weird stuff.
So, you know, how did it start out? What was the first weird occurrence that
happened? It started off fine, just regular routine procedures in the morning. Got there, had breakfast, you know, getting acquainted with everybody else, and we've all been busy trying to get our, our barracks ready for inspection. And one of the drill sergeants, Santini, came in, and he said, listen, guys, we're going to have a mandatory formation, parade formation, which means that you got to be out there if you're considered AWOL. And this was going to happen at about 7:30 at night. And when that came around about 7:30, and here comes Sergeant Santini again. And he started yelling at us, of course, and told us to get out of the building. Let's go to the parade field, which all of us did. And we stood out there, I think, for about half an hour, you know. Hey, where you been? How you going? Or, you know, same old stuff, routine stuff, like, you know, what school you go to, you know, just going to get kind of acquainted with everybody. And we stood out there in line, and, well, you know, everything sounded kind of routine, and all of a sudden some tall guy in front of me started talking about, hey, what's that? You know, I didn't pay no attention. I didn't know what he was talking about, but I kept saying, what is that? What's that? Well, my curiosity got the best of me. And I said, well, I got to look at what he's talking about. So I looked, and I'm telling myself, and I also said kind of out loud, what is it? You know, I don't see anything but stars. He said, and then he looked around to me, and he said, listen, look to the right and look up. So I did, and they just stars. I saw stars. And that was, I don't know what he was trying to tell me, but this is the weird parts where it starts. This one star in a cluster of stars started to move. Now, put this into your mind for a second here. You're holding this ice cube in your hand, right? You place it on a stainless steel floor, and you push that ice across the floor. It was smooth, right? It just moved really smooth across the sky. It's bright, real bright. And one of Drill Sergeant Newkirk, a big guy, says, hey, that's great. What is that up there? And I go, oh, 1977. I thought, well, it's a satellite. All right. Good. And that's my guess at that time, you know. But this thing moved and then came across the sky real smooth, like it was part of the sky, and it stopped. It went away from us for a few seconds. Came back, it stopped. It was like they were searching for something, you know? And it moved across the sky again, and it stopped. Moved away again. Came back, and it started to move across the sky again. You know, I'm staring at this, and so is everybody else now, and they're all pointing their fingers up in the sky and making all sort of noise and telling, hey, what is that, you know? And that's when I think Sergeant Santini, that time, is telling us to stand at attention because our captain is just walking out of his captain's building and onto this podium. And we weren't supposed to move. Well, I kind of looked up a little bit to see where the thing went, and it was gone. It was gone. I don't know where it went. And then, well, we stood out for another, we started listening to the captain making a speech about our training course and how long it's going to take, you know, and that's when suddenly, now, I'm going to get a little emotional here because I'm still looking at this, and, you know, every time when I talk about this, and my emotion gets high and low here, but it's like being there. And all of a sudden, I hear this rushing noise. I turn my head to my left, and I lean back a little bit to see what's going on, and I see this intense light coming down the dirt road, white, deer white, with kind of bluish outline to it. The dark, the place was getting dark anyway, so, yeah, I see somebody, the guys in a Charlie company breaking out of formation. Others were still standing still, and this light was coming down a dirt road, heading for us. I just looked at this thing and I said, well, "What is this? It looks like a helicopter coming down the road." So I kind of leaned forward, and the guy was standing in front of me. I was going to say something when I see this bright intense light heading toward us. I looked up and he's asleep, standing there asleep. So I didn't know what to do, but when I kind of looked at this light heading toward us, I guess I became unconscious for a few seconds, and when I came to, I couldn't move. I was stuck there. My foot could not move. My legs could not move. I was frozen. And all I could do is look to my right, and I see my buddy who was standing to my right running. I see the rest of the guys running, and others were standing still. I yelled at my buddy to come back and help me because I couldn't move, and he did that. And boy, he struggled for me to get out of getting away or something for me to move. And we sort of stopped running, and he's screaming, "Where's the captain?" I'm screaming, "Where's the captain?" We knew where the captain were, so we headed toward the podium, and we saw him. There he was, standing behind this podium. I yelled out loud, "Wake up!" And he didn't. He was asleep. By now, my buddies turned around looking at whatever it is behind us, and when I saw his face, I could still see his face. It was bad, really bad. It's like you'd just seen a ghost. His eyes had popped open, face had fell. I grabbed his shoulder and his collar, and I shook him real hard, and I said, "Don't look at it, don't look at it." I shook him. And when he came to, it's like he just asking what's going on, like he didn't know what was happening to him. I just kept screaming, take cover, run, take cover. We started to run. I noticed a lot of those guys were just running to the tree lines, and the others were diving underneath this 2 feet high crawl space from crawl space on his barracks building, and we started to run. When we got to the building, barracks building, and we could hear our names calling out from the far end of one of the buildings, and we ran over there, and there's about 4 or 5 other guys underneath the building. So we got underneath, and we started arguing about what's going on. You know, everything is happening fast, though. And, you know, we're arguing about this and that, cursing at each other, trying to, you know, we got into a fight with each other. I noticed, all of a sudden, we noticed that Sergeant Santini, he started running from the first building we just came from, and we saw him screaming, out loud, and it's like he was ready to fly. His arm was going up and down, it's ready to fly. And he's screaming, you know, take cover, and he took off running, and we lost him at this building here that we were underneath. And this is also unusual. I don't know where it came from, but there was a small light, bright, intense light, on the second level of this first building. And it's a light, white, bright light. It's about the size of, a volleyball. It came down from the second floor down to his height, which about in front, Sergeant Santini was about 5'11". It chased after him. We lost that ball of light on this building, and we heard this slap and a thump. And we looked at ourselves and then each other and said, uh-oh, I think Sergeant Santini just been hit by something. One of the guys crawled over to the front to see what happened, and he came back and told us Sergeant Santini's out on the pavement. He's not moving. So that's when we started talking and cursing at each other even worse. And right now we could hear what's happening is that from Alpha Company to Bravo Company to Charlie, and it was coming down, the guys who left behind there in formation started to scream. They were all one, and I could hear it right now. I don't know if you ever heard of a man screaming as if they were being eaten alive or something, but it was a high-pitched scream, bad, really bad. And some of the guys are screaming. Some of the guys are screaming, "Mommy!" Now these guys are men. Army personnel, and some of them are ex-Vietnam veterans, and they're screaming. And I tell my buddy who's underneath the building, "Hey, Jones, we need to go out and do something about this. Those guys are getting hurt. They're getting killed." And Jones just turned around and looked at me and said, "Forget about it, John. They're already dead." That's when I panic. I said, "All right, I'm getting everything. Where's the live ammo? I'm going to drop some of these things that's out there, whatever it is." And we got the understanding this is what we're going to do. And when we're arguing about this, and we're talking about, it's got to be the Russians, because 1977, that's all you saw, posters of Russians in our barracks. Posters everywhere.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, we were always, Russia was on the news, that's all we talked about, who would win, and... Russia was a big. John, how many men are we talking about?
We're talking about 1,300 people there.
Wow.
All in formation, mandatory formation. Each company has about 300 people.
And this light just came down a road.
Yep.
And it just started splitting everybody up, and so the people that were left on the field, were they like asleep before they started screaming?
They had to be asleep. Whatever it was, it put them to sleep. They didn't move. Some of them got sort of alerted to this object coming down on us, and they took off. They ran to the trees, and others, like I said, running underneath the buildings, taking cover. So, we're arguing about these things happening to us. And got to the point where we're talking about dropping and shooting them. When we start arguing about this and hearing all these screaming going on, suddenly we're not paying attention to what's going on away from us. And suddenly, out of nowhere, at the first building on the other side, the front, huge light, second floor level. It's like a huge searchlight cruising, real slow, like. Started moving around the building, and my buddy Alan, who's laying, and the rest of the people are, they're all laying with me. I mean, the building, and Alan just said, hey, John, what is it? And I go, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it's coming toward us. Huge light. I just say, you know what? We need to crawl in to the center of the building. It's much more darker. So we all of us crawled over to the center, and by now this huge light just parked itself right in front of us on the lawn. So that you know, I'm thinking this got to be a helicopter, but it's not making any winds. It's just a bright, intense light, and that's how it was. It was so bright, it silhouetted the underground here. We're seeing pine woods. And this is not all that's happening now, and depend all each other like this ain't like this can't be happening, but it is. It's real. It's not fake. It's not someone's dream that this bright intense light was sitting right in front of us.
John, all the commanding officers are also disorientated. So I mean, they didn't have a clue or weren't in on any like exercise. They were like freaking out too, weren't they? Anybody else that was on the commanding chain higher above?
Some, and you're right, Jeff. Some of them were out away from the formation, but they were underneath the building taking covers. Others were still standing still. I mean, standing in that formation, like my captain, who was asleep. They fall asleep. They're not moving. And we're panicking here. We're in, a high volume of intense feeling going here, emotion, high emotions. So we're all, you know, figuring out what is going on here, but things are happening so fast. And the on part, very hard, very strange part is this. I started to hear something. A female voice, like it was far away, echo. It sounded metallic. And I'm asking the guys, do you hear this female voice? And they keep like, oh man, something's wrong with Vasquez, something happened to him. And I kept hearing it. And it said this, it's okay. Don't be afraid. Come out. And I'm asking a guy the same thing, and they're looking at me like, oh, man, Vasquez. I kept telling him, listen to me. I'm going to crawl to the front, see what happens, and see what's going on. And, of course, all those guys that started agreeing with me, you know, yeah, go ahead, John. You go out there, see it. So I started crawling, you know. I want to get out of there and see what this whole thing's all about. And I noticed on the ground, I'm crawling, my hands would disappear. I'm telling him, I'm looking at my hands, and my hands are not there, but I feel the ground and all. I'm crawling. Maybe because of this intense light was making my hand disappear. I don't know. It's just a strange deal. I started crawling across the sidewalk up to this glassy wall. I stood up, I turned to my left, and this huge light just sitting there. All of a sudden I see this something small scurry right back into the light. I don't know what that was. Something was small, scurrying back to the light. So I want to take a better look at this. I guess I moved a little bit to the front, sir, and something hit my shoulder. It sounded like a fuse being blown, electric fuse. I go down. I feel sick. I'm blacking out. I look up and I see one of my buddies stretching out, screaming my last name. I reach for him and something else hit my back. I black out. Next thing I know, I hear there's somebody standing on my left, another one standing on my right, and I feel like I'm on some kind of an escalator going up to this bright light in the sky. I look down, And I'm not the only one that's coming up. There's other guys coming up. I couldn't believe it, you know. That's when I really panicked. I said, oh, my God, we're going to get eaten alive here or something. Make it saying, don't open your eyes. Don't open your eyes. I kept my eyes closed. And I guess I passed out. When I came to, I still had my eyes closed, but I hear the same female voice to me. And she's asking, how do you feel? You know, you can hear my words right now. I know you can. That was strange. How do I feel?
When you talk about the female voice the first time and this time, it just chills shot through my body.
Yeah, well, it was more than a chill for me. It was some...
I'm sure.
I'm telling you, I'm laying on some kind of metal slab, and she's asking how you feel. You know? And she told me, keep your eyes closed, and I guess they moved away from me or something. And I turned my head to my left. When I glanced to open my eyes up a little bit, I see rows and rows of us laying on metal slab. We were all levitated. In this room, oh my God, it was huge. It was the size of a mall. It was the size of a mall. It was that huge. And all of us are laying on metal slab.
Is that all you saw, John, were soldiers? You didn't see, like, regular, like, civilians or anything like that?
I saw guys wearing the same uniform as I am lying on metal slabs. And, of course, I don't know, whoever they were, they kept saying, keep your eyes closed. I could sense that they were around. They were sticking around, and, you know, I guess I know we went through some kind of physical examination. Because she was asking me a question about feelings. You know, that kind of puzzled me. I said, you don't understand what feelings is? And I didn't get an answer back. So I told her, there's two types. One, you feel something, intuition, gut feeling. The other one is somebody standing behind a door and you feel somebody behind there. You know, another one is when you put your two hands together, you feel your hand. And I get the impression that she was really surprised to hear this, or, you know, I did something right. That was odd. That was weird. And I tried to get up, but she told me, go back to sleep, which I did. I don't know how long that was, but when I sort of got up, I see this face looking at me, this strange, ugly face. Oh, terrible. The head was, looked like it had mumps on his head. Bald. A light bulb. Huge eyes. Tiny mouth, no ears, and he's telling me, look into his eyes. And I said, hey, I don't know who you are. Why should I look in your eyes for you, you know? I'm not going to look in your eyes. He kept saying, you have to look into my eyes. It will help you. I said, you're going to help me? So I did. You know, I didn't fight it. I just did, and three images came to my mind. One, I was standing in the middle of the ocean. No land for thousands of miles. Can't see nothing but water. And I'm standing on it. The other one, the second one that came into my mind, was that I was in a room with a huge TV screen. And I was watching it. And this screen was the size of a room. And it showed me a planet that was, I guess, being destroyed. Nothing was, everything was exploding. And I had this strange sort of, feeling that it was their planet. Their planet was being destroyed. And they were looking for another one. And I have to assume they already found one, which is here. The third one, third image came to my mind. I'm looking at a humanoid, pale face. It looks like a white paste. Whole face is white paste. Wearing a white dressing, white jacket or something. No eyebrows, long nose, small mouth. Looks like a hat for a dressing for a hat. And he had eyes that spoke like mercury, watery, liquid. That's what I saw. It would look like a humanoid, but it's not. It's something else, some creature. That's the last thing I saw, and what happened next is that I woke up, found myself standing in formation with my buddy, and everybody in that formation, everybody in that whole compound was there. It's just the odd part is, my buddy and I were standing on the second line, we're in the fourth line now. Somehow we moved.
So when you woke up, everybody was in formation again?
Yeah, everybody came back. Everybody was there.
Where was the commanding officer? Was he still by the podium?
Yep, he's still standing there.
Do you think there's some haunting similarities between Rendlesham and this? Almost like some sort of alien presence is showing itself to see how troops react to, I don't know why exactly, to study the troops. I mean, one could easily say they're studying the troops to conquer us, but if they were going to do that, they would have did it a long time ago. But let's say they're trying to make people aware of their presence. I mean, who better to go to than troops? That's the strongest, you know, humans around are troops. I don't know what they're, you know, why they're doing it. There's all kinds of speculation. You can go down some positive awareness, spiritual evolution path, or you can go down some, you know, aliens taking over the world, world-to-world scenario. It can swing either way. But it seems like also with Rendlesham that there was a lot of disorientation, possibility that, you know, similar things happen, that maybe these beings, you know, were really bold and just started, you know, basically experimenting and putting through procedures and studying troops, is what it seems like, as strange as it sounds.
Yeah, and I understand, Jeff. I have to put this across. I've been looking into this for the last 15, 16 years, and I've been trying to find documents and reports and whatnot, and I came up with one that was interesting, very interesting. It's a project that the military was conducting at the time, back in 1977, September. It was a project called JAWS. It's an acronym for Joint Attack Weapon System. They were testing exercising, all right? The military disliked the word test. Exercise is the word. We're talking about this project, JAWS, was for this airplane call, the A-10. They were made by Fairchild, and they were flying these planes at Dallas Air Force Base, and they flew from Nellis to Fort Benning, Georgia, parked at Lawson Airfield, Fort Benning. And I requested information about this from the Inspector General's office, and their response was that these A-10 airplanes were not parked at Fort Benning at all. However, when I contacted Donovan's Library in Fort Benning, they sent me a photograph of these A-10s parked at Lawson Air Base in Fort Benning. From Fort Benning, the same plane went to England, flew to England, to Bentwater, Woodbridge, where these other airmen had an encounter with UFOs. And I've been in touch with Mr. Jim Tennyson, those guys who had a problem or some encounters. And I told them about this fine. And I believe that those guys had an encounter and much more. They're not talking about it, which is an abduction. They're not talking about themselves being abducted, but I believe they have. They went through the same courses, so to speak, like us. But these guys are not talking about it. If they don't want to talk about it, that's fine. You know what I mean? That's fine with me. They don't want to talk about it. But they went through something, definitely.
So the A-10, you're talking about the Warthog, right?
Yeah, Warthog, exactly.
Are you implying that the A-10 had something to do with what was going on? Was it part of a?
Well, Jeff, in a way, that could be, because at that time the A-10, as I found out, that we had titanium metal where the pilots could get protection. And my thinking right now is it's a real good possibility that these outsiders or foreigners or from some other world were interested in this metal that we had on these A-10. And they were following it.
Yeah,
I may be wrong about that, Jeff. And maybe because we were also all of a sudden being surprised, so to speak, a surprise attack at Fort Benning, and they took off and went to England for some reason to do the same thing again. That's my wild guess on that.
Yeah, the A-10 is pretty devastating. I mean, they still use it. They use it in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's slow moving like a helicopter, and it just does these, you know, strafing runs.
Yeah,
these huge Gatling guns. It's pretty awesome. In fact, they tried to kill it, and then they decided to bring it back. So
you can't find anything like that except for the Russians. They have some plane just like ours, but then you know they don't have that. They have the same firepower like ours, but they have different design. But the A-10 is pretty awesome, like you said.
So, John, after you guys all woke up, like all 1,300 people woke up standing at attention, what was the consensus out there? Was everybody just really confused? Did everybody just,
well,
you know?
Yeah, Joe Sargent, I think it was Newkirk or Santini, was telling us, go back to your barracks, that's enough. Just go back. Walk back to your barracks. And I'm thinking here that, hey, where's the speech? I didn't hear no speech from the captain. You know, I'm telling my buddy, where's the speech? What happened to the speech? And also, I'm telling him, go back. Just go back to the barracks. So I started walking back to the barracks. I lost my balance. Looks like the ground just came up on me. A lot of the guys fell down. We all got up, you know, walked around a little bit. We felt dizzy. Starting walking back to our barracks, we got sick, you know. And I looked at my watch, and it says 7:30. Another guy said, no, it's 3:30. Another one says 4:45. All the watches stopped. We started walking back into the barracks, and this is the most bizarre and absolutely wild things going on in the barracks. The guys were acting really weird, just plain weird behaviors, odd behaviors. Some of the guys went to sleep with a flashlight on and the blanket covered over their bodies and faces. Others are popping up screaming they see faces on the walls. It was really an unusual night. I'm telling you, it was kind of a place where, you know, I think something was happening. Maybe it was in the air. I don't know.
Yeah, you think they could have strafed you guys with, like, some sort of gas or some sort of chemical? Or?
Yeah, that's a good possibility. That's been a possibility, too. Or, you know, I've been talking people who's in the medical department, and they're saying they could have used sound waves, anything. But sound waves don't pick you up and take you somewhere at all. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Well, I've read theories online about your story about hallucinogenics and LSD and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, I've done LSD before, and I've seen odd beings on LSD. Most people back in my younger days, they would be like the curtains moving. I would be out in the woods seeing beams of light and, like, friggin' weird stuff from Celtic folklore and the other world and druids and shamanism. That's a possibility, and that's what I like about you. You're open to different possibilities, and so you're still trying to figure it out, and that's what we're all trying to do when we have these experiences. But, and just to say, for instance, if they did give you hallucinogenics, that still doesn't mean just because you had hallucinogenics that these events didn't happen, because hallucinogenics, as we all know in the shamanistic cultures and traditions, open us up to the spirit world and these beings. And there's so much crap forced down our throats through consumerism and America and spoon-fed garbage that these psychedelics and stuff like that break down the walls and open up the doors. Like,
yeah.
I could get anyone listening to this, and if the veil dropped of all that's going around us, we'd probably shit our shorts. There's just so much going around us at one time spiritually.
Yeah, Jeff, well, but if you have a bunch of guys who are soldiers, and they're trained to do certain things when they're under attack, you know, so if you're going to approach 1,300 soldiers who are trained to kill you, you know, if you attack them, I think the first thing to do would be to disorient them, you know, disorient them and make them forget all their training, you know, so they could then be, you know,
I have to say that, you know, this all happened after dinner. They could have dropped it on our food, and all of us hallucinated. But did we all hallucinate the same thing? Is there a connection in that hallucination we're talking about?
Well, you had other experiences too, didn't you, while you were at the base?
Yeah, oh yeah, well, you bet. Lots of stuff happened to us when we were at that base at Fort Benning. I mean, we after all that incident that one night, we woke up next morning, and I woke up late, and I'm never late waking up. I mean, there's breakfast at about 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. I woke up about 10. And I'm going, well, where is everybody? And everybody was downstairs sitting around in a bunch of bleachers. I went down there and asked him, well, hey, you guys were right away last night, weren't you? I mean, weren't you sitting around or standing around? You know what? Didn't remember a thing. All blank.
Did any of the other troops talk about this at all? to you or the commanding officers or anybody? Did anyone talk about it, or was it kind of like an unspoken, you know, thing going on?
Well, it was sort of both ways. I mean, we had the feeling, as deep down inside your feeling, that something unusual happened. We knew something happened. You could feel it. I mean, in case for yourself or anybody else who does something, has something to happen to them, and all of a sudden you forget about it or something happened to you, you still feel the after effects as sort of a kind of a residue involved in your body. You know, you still walk around going, wait a minute, well, hey, this happened, you know?
So there was no, like, reveille or anything for you in the morning? They just let you guys sleep?
No, just slept till 10. I woke up and I got dressed and went downstairs and everybody's outside sitting around waiting for something. I don't know what. And that was another odd feeling, you know, feeling or odd sight. Everybody not saying a word.
Were the commanding officers, did they carry on like nothing happened?
They weren't there on the weekend. Went home. Everybody went home on the weekend, except maybe one sergeant was there, Sergeant Santini.
And when did you start deciding to go and talk about this more, you know, public with it?
Well, we were trying to figure it out what was going on that weekend. I mean, it was like a puzzle we put together. Everybody's talking about, hey, you know, they had their own group. They wanted to talk to each other about something. And, you know, we kind of walked around the compound, you know, stopping the rest of the other people in Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie. We're talking about this. Or, you know, there was all lots of rumors going around. But we had a, you know, talk. You know, it was like a puzzle, really. A puzzle talk, you know, something like, what happened last night? What happened to us? Or, do you remember anything at all? It's a blank. Nobody had the answers right. Monday came around, and next thing you hear is that only Delta Company was going to be marched out to the forest. Trees out there. We left Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie Company at the post. Only Delta Company started walking out. You know, I'm thinking, Jeff, when this thing started coming down on us, it put Alpha Company, Bravo Company, and part of Charlie Company to sleep. And as for Delta, when it came to Delta Company, some of us reacted. That's the military inside us that would react to some danger. And we reacted. We started running. That's why they took us out of there to see what was going to happen to us out in the trees. It took us 8 miles, walked 8 miles out to some hillside. When we got there, it was only, a drill sergeant, maybe our captain, and a first sergeant. That night, we started building a fire camp, and boy, Sergeant Santini got really ticked off about that one. Started kicking the scent. The fire in our faces, you know, and telling us and screaming us, don't build any campfires or anything. Some of us got hurt a little bit, got burned, and we had to go talk to the captain about this, that Sergeant Santini is getting wild on us for some reason. And the cars, we went up to the captain's tent. He had a tent there. And we told the captain, and he asked the question, how intelligent are you guys? We kind of looked around and kind of, I don't know what he meant by that, but then we told him we're as intelligent as sending a man to the moon and back. He looked at the first sergeant. First sergeant looked at the captain. They just kind of shook their heads and just walked out.
Strange.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I'm looking at the captain, and he's just walking out, and he says, the camp's yours. The camp is yours. And he just took off in a Jeep.
And you almost wonder, too, if maybe some the government knows about it and they're working with these beings to see, like, they're all, like, in on it, or somebody, like, the captain maybe knows. I mean, there's so many things, so many ways to go with it. It's just maddening.
Yeah, there's madness here where you can take all kinds of avenues on this and say, hey, these guys are involved with something. But are they? Were they surprised also? Maybe. You know, they might just said, hey, guess what's happening? Look what we got involved with.
It's a crash course in ufology, isn't it?
Crash course? My God. It was more than a crash course. It was live ammunition. That's a code name. Live ammunition.
Password. Live ammunition.
Yeah, password. Live ammunition. Always knows the password, I think. I don't know if those guys are still alive, but I'm sure they are. You know what I need to do, Jeff? Is go on national, show my face, and I'm the key. I'll bring them out of their misery, repressed memories. They'll brighten up. They'll see it. They might freak out. They know live ammunition. Simple as that.
Well, usually people that go through the experiences start seeking more about it on some level.
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, you know how that started off with us getting worse and having repressed memory is at the end of the month of September, we had this captain, or what was it, a lieutenant, Silver Bar, female, 5 foot tall, real petite, walking around in our camp, in a compound, and I'm telling myself, who is this woman coming around? She's the only woman captain around here. She showed up out of nowhere.
Hey, John?
Yeah.
Hey, let's pick this up in the second hour. We got to go to break now.
Okay.
Yeah, just stay on the phone, John. We're going to keep the phone near you. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we can talk, or if you got to go, do whatever.
Yeah.
But just keep the phone on. We should take a little 10-minute break.
Will do. I'll be here.
All right. I'm going to stare outside and pee off my porch. To the Church of Mabus. Our guest is John Vasquez. Alien interference experiment incident at Fort Benning, 1977. Basically, we're at the point to where John was talking. Seemed the captain was acting a little strange, and then suddenly there's a new some new faces at the base, which was a woman who apparently was a psychiatrist, right, John?
Yes, that's right, Jeff. She was a psychiatrist. We found that out.
And did you ever sit down and, like, talk to her about any of this?
No, she didn't. We didn't sit down. She just came up to me one day when I was at the pool room and playing pool and watching TV. She just showed up, and she was with one of my friends, close friends, and I don't know. Normally, my close friend would come up to me and ask me, "Hey, John, what's going on?" You know, one of those kind of questions. And I'm telling him what's going on. And well, this time he kind of looked at her, and she looked at him, and he just walked away. And I thought that was strange. or she was in charge of him or something. He didn't say anything to me. So she started walking up the stairway, and I saluted, and she saluted. Next thing I know is that she's grabbing my left hand and pulling it to her, and she's telling herself, I'm going to hate this. I'm going to hate myself for doing this. And she jabbed me. She jabs me. Jab me. Something sharp, like a pin or a needle. And I go down. I'm under this drug-induced hypnosis. And she's asking me all kinds of questions. Everything. Everything about what happened, my background, my personal life. You know?
So she jabbed you with something like out of the blue? She didn't tell you she was going to jab you with something?
No, nothing. She just took my hand, and she just gave me a needle. Hit me with the needle on my right hand at the end of the soft part, at the edge. I went under.
Where'd you go under at? Near the stairwell, or were you in an office?
No, on the ground. On the ground.
On the ground?
Yeah. She put me on the ground.
That feeds more into the theory of the government being in on it too, on some level. So I mean, it's, you know, I'm seeing these alien beings possibly. You know, there's all kinds of theory, you know, stories about the government working with them, and you know, maybe they were working with them, and the thing was to see how would human troops react to an alien interference. And then afterwards, you send in psychiatrists to gather data to see what the results would be.
Yeah. Well,
it sounds like
Yeah. Or it could be this way, too. A scenario is this way. They didn't know nothing about this encounter that we had, and they had to find out what we knew so they could make a certain report. You know, back in 77, this is an opportunity for our government to know what's going on. They had no idea, and she was the one who would get the information and
that's
make a
possibility
report.
Too.
Yeah, and boy, the hard part was when she was telling me, "I'm going to count to three, and you're going to forget everything you know about this." And you know how she did that? It was very painful. Very, very painful. She stuck her left finger on my left temple and her right finger on my right temple. She squeezed and said, you're going to forget everything. You're going to forget everything. You don't think I screamed out loud for help?
But you didn't forget everything, did you? Here you are.
It took me a long time, I'll tell you. That was repressed memory. That's the way they repress your memory. Okay? I didn't remember that until 1989. When I woke up with a bad, horrible, nightmarish dream that I ever had in my life. I woke everybody in the house. I was shaking.
So, John, did all your memories come back at once, like the whole encounter out in the field, or are they just little bits and pieces that you've just put together over the years?
Well, actually started with little bits and pieces, little by little. I started to see the faces that was there, and I say, hey, these guys, they're my buddies, you know what I mean? And little by little, all these memories started to come back. Slowly, okay? It didn't happen right away, and that's why I started talking to, Dr. Richard Feltman, clinical psychologist, all right? I told him, this is what's happening. This is really weird. I mean, what is this all about, you know? And he says, listen, John, listen, I'll get involved with you about investigating these paperwork and documents and reports. And little by little, it's like a puzzle, putting them together, where it goes and what's happening. And it showed a clear picture about what happened to us, little by little. He believes me.
We believe you too, John. Just,
I believe you.
Yeah, we believe that you know, you had something very traumatic happen. Now, the psychologist, did she? This was after you had all the experiences in, like, in the forts and stuff too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and all these firing with each other, and then shooting this chopper down, and oh my God, it was a nightmare. I'm telling you.
What happened? What happened in the forest with all that?
Well, in the forest, when we got there, you know, I told you that the captain left. And there's no supervision at all, just 300 of us. And we're the oldest person in there at that campsite was only, 25 years old. And we're trying to figure out, why did he leave? You know, why did the captain leave? Well, during that week, you know, we trying to figure out how we're going to get food. Maybe this was another military exercise for us to stay out there and see how we can, you know, survive, or survival exercise. And that's what we're thinking about. And somebody come up and say, hey, maybe we committed mutiny. And I said, mutiny? What? You know, I mean, there was all kinds of rumors flying all over the place. I mean, it was ridiculous. But when we're out there, one night, of course, we had live ammunition, which we weren't supposed to have, but we picked that up with this colonel coming around on the other side of the hill to arrest us all. He brought live ammunition. That was his mistake. When we went to the captain's tent, they had a map with numbers on them. Each block had numbers. It's a location of where who's there, what's going on. Figured that this colonel brought, this is the information we got, that this colonel brought another company on the other side of the hill. So all of us decided to go to his camp at middle of the night and take their food and live ammunition, which we did. We went into the colonel's tent and told him, we have your live ammunition, you know. And there was a sergeant in there with sidearms. And the colonel says, I underestimated all of you guys. So we went back to our tent. We had a small party going on. I mean, we did something good. We all thought it was just still an exercise. But now we got live ammunition, and we're not allowed to have live ammunition in the area we were at, because the firing range was about 8 miles on the other side of Fort Benning. That's the only time you could have live ammunition. So we're trying to figure out, whoa, man, you know, we got live ammunition. That night, or at least two more nights later, we're hearing that Green Berets were going to show up, which they did. That was surprising. We had a little scuffle with them. They wanted us to give the live ammunition to them, and we asked them, you know, for us to go back to the base under protection. Well, he said, that's not my decision to make. That's not my decision to make, you know, something like that. And I figured, well, it must be that colonel who sent these guys out here. And again, we got into some physical confrontation with these guys. So we started walking away to this dirt road. And I don't know, well, I can't say I don't know. I was there. But one of my buddies, Wilson. He had a flare gun. He shot the flare gun, and we saw this flash. You know, we thought, oh, well, it's a flare gun flash. But no, it was a strange flash. Blinded most of us. And I don't know, I don't know. And after the flare fell to the ground, all of us had this strong feeling of fright. I mean, all of us felt the being out there. So we started to walk back to the clearing where our tents were, which we built. The tents were all gone. It just disappeared. The tents just disappeared. We're trying to figure out where the tent's at. We stood out there in this field. We stood at this field for a while, and we tried to go back to the road, and we're saying, let's go back to the road. I think we'll feel much safer on the road. And when we tried to do that, we couldn't. It's like some kind of force was around us, force field, something. We couldn't move. So we forced ourselves to push each other to move around, move forward. Somehow we broke through something, started walking back to the road, and two of our guys took off back to where we're standing at. And I asked Jones, hey, why are those guys running over there for? And he tells me that they see some other people standing around there where we were just. We were just there, they started running over there, and I said, no, just calm back, you know, we're going to lose them. So they started coming, and they called them back, and those two guys ran back to us, and they looked like they'd just seen a ghost, both of them. Their faces were white tail, and we're asking them, what's wrong? You know, what do you guys see? And they're pointing to the group of people that I could see, like shadows. And so did the rest of the people who were standing with me. And I said, well, let's go see who these guys are. And so we started walking over there. And you talk about feeling of horror and terror. You know what we saw? We saw ourselves standing in front of us. Yeah, it sounds real, I don't know how you put it, so crazy, so wild. We're seeing ourselves looking at each other. You talk about horror, terror?
Weird.
Well, worse than weird. I started screaming, let's get the bleep out of here, you know?
That whole place is just like a freaking mind screw, man.
Something, Jeff. Something was happening to all of us at that split second. Something was happening to all of us, and everybody was freaked out. We started walking away from the same guys. I mean, walking away from us. We went back on the road. Again, Wilson shot the flare, and then again there was a bright, intense light again. And when we didn't feel, when the flare dropped to the ground, we didn't feel fright anymore. We weren't frightened. So we started walking back to the field again. And this time the tents were there. I don't know where they showed up, the tents. They were all there. We went up to the hillside, and there's that captain again, Green Ray captain. He just walked out of the woods and said, where the hell are you guys been? You guys were gone for 5 hours. And I go, whoa, man, we were just gone for about 5-10 minutes. You know, I never heard a captain captains, using four-letter words and all kinds of colorful words. That's the first time I ever heard this captain say something like that. I mean, he was frightened. We were gone. 5 hours.
Wow.
You talk about the strangest thing happening? Man. That's why, you know what, Jeff? I really, really want to make a documentary or at least a movie out of this. I really do. At least I know what I'm seeing every time when I talk about this. I don't know about the rest. I mean, they might think, oh, this is all Hollywood. No, I don't think so. Not the stuff we went to. Not the stuff we went to.
And then you have to wonder if this phenomenon was going on at other bases and the government was just trying to figure out what the hell's going on, and maybe they knew that it was, you know, beings testing the troops. I mean, that's another, you know, different perspectives to look into it, but, you know, this could have been happening at many levels to government personnel from Britain to here to, you know, God knows where, and the government maybe was just trying to figure out what the hell was due and maybe they weren't in on it. And then they sent the psychiatrist out to, you know, study it and to find out, you know, what was going on. They might have dealt with this before. I mean, it's just, at any point, did anyone in the government or your unit or any of the higher-ups later on, or did anyone ever approach you and say, hey, John, you need to shut up, or start threatening you or anything about talking about this stuff?
You know, the point, you make a good point about that. That cat or that lieutenant, female lieutenant, shut us up real fast with those hypnosis she conducted on all of us. I haven't heard anything from my buddies and my friends. She did her work. She did her work.
Absolutely. And just maybe there's something in you that was stronger and remembered it. How do you feel?
Well, you know, like, I feel free. I mean,
yeah.
I was closed up. The door was locked. You know what I mean? I mean, Dr. Feldman says, how do you feel, too? The same thing. And I say, you know, listen, I feel like I've been, my ball and chain's been come off. You know? That's it. I'm free. It's been years and years and years.
So have you reached out? Have you tried reaching out to any of your close friends?
You know, I tried to find them. I even contacted, what was that, Fort Benjamin in Indiana, where they keep all the paycheck stubs and information about the people who, was at Fort Benning? And their reply was that, we can't give you that. And I said, wait a minute, I'm just asking for their names. I'm not asking for the Social Security, the telephone, or the address. I just want to know that you have a names and the people who were at Fort Benning with Delta Company and 1st Battalion, 1st Infantry. They just said, no. In short words, no. We can't give you that.
Mm.
I'm telling myself something. You know, at that time, I'm telling myself, oh, my God, this thing did happen.
Did you, after you went back home, away from Fort Benning and everything, and you went to, I guess, San Diego, have you had any experiences that have happened outside of Fort Benning?
Well, there's some part of it that's a bit odd. It's like I'm a beacon or something. I'm going to, Hotel Del Coronado. And I was working there as a waiter, and one day I was late, so I come back. Had to go around to the garden room, and the glass doors were locked up, so I had to go back out and see this lady up on the second floor, silver hair down to her waist, wearing a white gown, and walking across to the second floor, and I said, good morning, and she looked at me and gave me a angry frown. I said, oh, gosh, I'm in trouble. So I walked out to the hallway, and then I could hear her say, it's not your fault. So I went back to see what she meant by that, and she was gone. Later,
wow.
About a day later, a maitre d' and one of the waitresses come up, and even a bus boys, they all telling me, hey, there was nobody up there. And I'm telling myself, what do you mean? What are you guys talking about? Nobody up there. There was a lady walking around. She, maybe she got lost, you know? This is a big hotel. I heard that there was 1920, somebody murdered this woman. And I'm thinking, what are you guys talking about, ghost? I don't think so. I don't believe in ghosts yet, but I'm telling you. So, I mean, you get to some places and you go homes and, you know, the Whaley House we've got right here in San Diego, and everybody knows about the Whaley House. That place is possessed, I'm telling you. Really possessed. I mean, everybody knows about this Whaley House on Old Town. The swing rock spot back and forth by itself, and they hear music playing. I don't know. I don't know, Jeff.
Well, when you say she was frowning or angry, I mean, most of these beings that, you know, the typical beings that you've sort of described and the ones that we're familiar with, they don't exactly smile, do they? I've never heard of a smiling gray alien that I know of.
Not only this woman I saw at the Hotel del Coronado was a being at all. I think it was a spirit, somebody who passed away a long time ago, because the way she floated across the floor, I'm going, well, where's, you know, how's she doing? I don't know, you know. But I thought maybe I'm a beacon or something. Get the spirit like to come along and see or what. I don't know, you know. I never went through that road yet, but I'm getting pretty close to going there and to find out more stuff about this.
Well, when I've had my experiences before, I've had friends tell me, Jeff, you're obviously attracting these on some level, and I went nuts thinking I was like an alien or something. And that's one thing we got into a little bit with Travis Walton and Tom Reed when we did our Fear of Phobia show. Uh-huh. I brought up my theory that, I mean, for instance, we all know that we have an eternal, immortal soul inside of us that obviously came from another dimension before it came into the earthly realm, and who's to say these beings aren't caretakers of that dimension or of the earth or other dimensions, and who's to say our spirit on some level didn't interact with them, or maybe our spirit or soul is them on some level and we are them on some level. I say I'm right, but just a theory, but who's to say that maybe on some level in another dimension we didn't agree to, that possibly we did agree to go through these experiences, and then a part of us agreed at that time to remember and to be aware of these experiences, and then to become a messenger to let people know that, hey, there's a lot more to life than, you know, what's going on. There's a whole lot more going on. And maybe, you know, that's something I've thought about with my experiences, and it kind of came up again when we were talking about, I started remembering talking to Travis and Tom about that. I mean, it's a possibility. You know, that's ufology. It's a possibility. Speculation, speculation, speculation. But for me personally, it makes sense because I had some experiences where I was having bad luck getting interviews, and I prayed, and the next thing you know, I had mass UFO sightings with family in the sky here in Florida, and then shortly thereafter, I'm on the phone with Stanton Friedman and, you know, all these people and getting interviews like it was connected to these, you know, seeing these UFOs, like my luck increased. It was a good omen. So that's a theory, too, that I kind of throw around that I actually feel very comfortable with, and I don't know. For me, I think there's something to it. I can't speak for everybody, though, of course.
Yeah. Well, and that's interesting, Jeff, because, you know, you mentioned about spirits and you had sort of a connection with the spirits because my great-great-grandpa, he's a Zuni native, and he's from Weber, New Mexico. And, I used to have stories that he used to tell my dad that the people who pass away would return back as eagles, wolves, you know, animals, some kind of animal. But sometimes the spirit do show themselves to make you look at the future, your life, and sort of being a guide, you know. And, you know, I still can't put my finger onto it because, you know, once in a while this sort of unusual feeling or this unusual encounter do happen with the spirits. But that's once in a great, great while. Now,
so do you see, John, do you see, like, shadow people or anything like that on a regular basis? Do you see...
No.
Do you see anything like that?
No.
No,
I'm trying to be, you know, every time when I go places or, you know, talk to people, I'm going to be down to earth and tell you no. Because if I don't see it, I don't see it. If I experience something, and if it's as weird as this story that I have, as wild as this story that I have, I'll do my best to give you an image of what happened to us and what was going on at the time. And it's real. It's not, you know, some kind of imagination or hallucination I had back in the military. But, you know, every day is a reality, and that's where I'm staying at. Down the
beach. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's kind of my belief that when something like this happens to someone, it makes them more receptive to other things or make them pay attention more, you know, to other things, which all of a sudden you'll start seeing, you know, ghosts or, you know, people talking.
Your senses become more alert to what's going around you.
Right.
It does. It really does. It's like a tingling. It's like a... Your body becomes tingling, and you got this goosebumps over you. It's like something is crawling over you. You know, that's
kind of yeah. I call it your spidey senses, man, like Spider-Man, because I
there you go.
I get that too. You know, yeah. I'll start getting that weird feeling, and all of a sudden, you know, something weird will happen. You know,
I've had that all day today. When I talked to Nancy Red Star about the native, you know, the Hopi and the star people talking to the shamans and stuff, I did. When John started talking about the female voice, I did. And it's something that doesn't happen to me all the time. But today it's been happening a lot, a whole lot.
It's like I said, when I heard this female voice, it sounded like a far away sort of echo, and it's metallic. Like she was in some kind of room or something where the sound just comes back at you, you know? And it sounds
right.
So far away. I mean, that was so weird. It was weird. I'm telling you, I'm hearing this, and I'm asking the guys underneath the building, do you hear this? Do you hear this? And they're kind of looking at each other like, hey, John, something's wrong with John. Something's happening to him, you know? So that's where it was at that time, and I'm telling the guys, listen, I'm going to go out there and see what's going on. That was my impression.
So what do you think happened, John? What do you think was the deal with seeing your doppelgangers? Were your doppelgangers, were they, like, surprised to see you too?
I'm sorry, what was that again?
You know when you saw yourselves out in the woods?
Yeah.
Were your other selves surprised too to see you?
Surprised.
Or were they just like acting normal and doing?
No, they looked at us like they were seeing like a ghost or something.
Okay.
And their eyes are all popped out, and they're looking at us, and we're looking at them, and I'm looking at myself. You know, I thought it was a mirror, but no, it wasn't a mirror. There was no huge mirror out there. I know there wasn't. Nobody had a huge mirror like this. I mean, come on. You know, I mean, you could have seen the mirror if it was this huge. No, it was us. We were looking at each other like time warp or something.
Multidimensional realities.
And a time slip.
That's crazy, man.
I agree. It was crazy. It really was crazy. And how to explain this? You know, I wish I had more excitement, then I could write it down or maybe put it on record and let you know what else is going to be involved in this experience.
Well, listen, John, I mean, we totally understand, you know. Jeff and I both had some very, you know, intense experiences. And, you know, they all sound, everybody, the minute you start talking about it, you sound nuts.
I'll tell you, Jeff. All the response I got from Amazon.com concerning my book are from a military compound called Fort Benning. And you know, these guys, I mean, the words and the information and same old stuff, F this and F that, and he's on drugs, and he was a dealer, you name it. Hey, they're all out there, you know. They're all saying that that's John Vasquez. And, you know,
right.
I just shine it off, and I said, well, that's their problem, not mine. I was there. I know John Vasquez myself, okay? That's me. I was there. I was there, present. And, you know, they could call me whatever they want to call me. You know,
they're just primitive monkey heads stuck in there.
Oh, gosh.
Ignorant. That is. Huh. They're out there.
I know what's going on. Of course I do. I know exactly what's going on. And you know what? This government knows too. And a lot of stuff they're not telling everybody at all. And you know what? They're going to keep it that way. They're going to keep it. I mean, a lot of people say, yeah, well, that's going to be disclosure. Well, good luck.
No, they're not. Nobody's going to give up all that power and control. Sorry, it's not going to happen.
Well, this power and control got to switch or change something.
Yeah, I know with other countries right now, a lot of weird stuff's happening. They're trying to get America the pressure, you know, into releasing something. But I think half of the UFOs these other countries are seeing are spying on them from our own country. So,
I mean,
I also want to bring up, I want to thank Dr. Joe Resnick. He's the one that told us about you.
Yeah.
And then I started, you know, I think I added you or you were already on my friends list, and he's the one that said we should interview you when we interviewed Dr. Joe Resnick. And then I looked and researched you on Google and stuff to learn more about you because, like, I don't know every UFO case that's ever happened. I'm a Georgia boy. I know my extent of knowing UFO lore was Whitley Strieber and my own experiences. So when I came across your story, I was like, wow, this was in Georgia too. And it was from Joe because he told us about you. And I've looked you up and down on the Internet, and I haven't seen one negative thing. You know, I haven't looked on Amazon, but that's Amazon. There's always going to be some negative dickwads. But I've, you know, read your story on that women's esoteric site. There was a good thing there about your whole entire story. That's where I learned a lot of stuff from about it there as well.
Well, Jeff, I know, you know, the important part for me right now is this disappointment that I have about the news, the media. You know, they want to listen to a lot of these experts. You know, sometimes I get a little teed off about these experts. Who are these experts anyway? They got a panel going and want to judge you for your stories and, you know, they call themselves experts. And I'm telling myself, if they were experts, you mean they're saying that they were there? They've been abducted too? But no, they never say that. They never say that they've been abducted, only that they have a story they heard, and they go to these meetings and they approve of their you know, answers or questions they have, and they become experts. I mean, that's kind of cut and dry a little bit, you know, not giving anybody a chance to really come up with their story of what happened and being judged about it, you know. And
they're controlled by who, God knows who, the government. That's where my theory fits in, the messenger theory. You know, your experience happened, you came forward, you told the truth about it. And let's pretend that everybody that comes forward with their experiences, who's involved as a guest on a show or who does a radio show, who's out in the public doing their bit, talking about this, raising awareness, pretend you have a metaphysical, you know, catapult. We're all firing these catapult wall, you know, hoping it falls down. And, you know, sure, disclosure may not ever happen, but lately, you know, the UFOs, stuff is definitely a level of bizarre in our lifetimes that I don't believe has been present before in other lifetimes. I mean, the Vatican's, you know, come forward saying they'd love to baptize aliens, which is creepy. It's like you kind of screwed up the Native American thing. You might want to stay away from the aliens. Mm-hmm. And then there's all these, you know, discoveries of Earth-like planets and, you know, there's life here, Saturn, water on the moon. I mean, we have to admit that it's leading up to something, even though it's baby steps. We all know the truth, but it's like, you know, there's a lot more going on with it than usual, and I do believe more is going to happen. But I'm also a pessimist on that level. I think the only way anything is going to happen too big to find out the truth is if something really ecologically chaotic happens, such as the plate shift or, you know, some kind of global apocalyptic, you know, reckoning, which could revolve around the whole Mayan calendar situation that's approaching. Maybe something so ecologically horrible could happen that these beings finally just come out to, you know, I hate to use the Superman Jesus save us theory, but I don't know. It's just speculation to you, like everything. But you got to look at it when you're feeling down about it, that you've done your share. You wrote a book about it. You do the show circuit. You're firing your catapults right next to us. We're knights on the front line. Sooner or later, that son of a bitch is going to fall.
It's like this. When you feel your first earthquake, you figure, what is this? You know, and the whole building's moving, and you never had this experience before. Now you do. You know, I feel the concerned and the concern about the people who never had an experience like this. I think they got a better choice to it, because that could go forward and back to what feelings they have about the people who went through this unusual event. You know, I'd rather be doing that than to have the experience and go through the hell that I went through and the terror and the horror. I'd rather say, yeah, well, you know, listen, I heard a lot of stories, but I'm not an old expert, that's for sure. Unfortunately, I went through something that's so bizarre, so strange, that it's like having to feel an earthquake, a huge earthquake, that everything moves, and your mind is telling you, what is going on here? You know what I'm saying? It's that strong feeling that something really odd is happening to you.
It's called a constant apocalypse.
Something, I'll tell you that for sure. It's happening to you. It definitely is happening. I wish a lot of the people who really are interested or want to find out the truth, they should go to Fort Benning. They should go to Fort Benning who's going through it right now. And one's, like I said earlier, is that one's a drill sergeant, and his wife is going through the same area, which is on Sand Hill. That's the same area that I was training back in 1977, with the old building, barracks, two-story high with huge windows. And you know, they're seeing on Sand Hill intense lights moving around there. Now, these buildings, these old buildings that I was staying in are gone now. And the Fort Benning, Georgia company, which company I don't know, but now they got buildings that's called starships. It's much better than the old ones. I mean, we had to go outside to another building, go have lunch, dinner, breakfast. Now these new buildings are all, everything are inside, like a mall in itself.
And they call them what? Starships?
Starships.
That's starships. Weird.
and they're being obsolete now, too, becoming obsolete. They started building those things back in 1982. I talked to a California Highway Patrol officer who came up to me one day, and we started talking, and I said, I wrote a book about Fort Benning. He popped up and says, hey, I was a lieutenant or a captain back then at Fort Benning. I said, well, here's my book. You know, things were happening, and I asked them about the old buildings. They told me, yeah, they destroyed that, landscaped the whole thing, and built new buildings called starships. And I went to some investigation on that to make sure I'm going to have some connection here. And sure enough, they're called starships.
Oh, yeah, one thing before we close out, I wanted to ask you about you were telling me an email about the info about the crash that happened on channel WTVN 9 Columbus, Georgia, some kind of crash? What was that?
Yeah, that I found out that one of my friends, I think it was telling me that was a UFO crash back in November 28 or the 26th, 2006. Something dropped out of the sky, and the FAA, Fire Department, and Army Fort Benning personnel were all there searching for this object. They found something. They thought up, trucks and all, and they picked it up and took it back to Fort Benning. So, and then there's a video about that on Channel 9 News, Columbus, Georgia. I've been talking to a reporter named Chuck Leonard. That's his name. He knows about it. Chuck Leonard. He knows about this crash. They got a video there.
Man, that's interesting.
I'm sorry.
Georgia, 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 on my mind.
I miss Georgia. I do miss Georgia.
I don't ever want to go back there. I've had so much bad stuff happen to me there. The UFO stuff scared the hell out of me, but I've also had, all kinds of other bad crap happen. I don't even want to step foot there.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know. It just kind of seems to me to have this longing to go back there again, because there's some places there that's still going on. It's active.
Yeah.
It's active. I don't believe it, but then it's active. Right now, if we go back there, you and I go back there, and everybody else wants to follow along, I know a place that this thing's happening right now, like Joe Sargent and his wife, who's right there in Fort Benning right now, as we speak, is encountering unusual bright lights, hovering all over the place, moving all over the place. And they're taking a video and pictures about this event going on right now. And that's what, 30 years since 1977?
Yeah.
And these folks are seeing this?
Georgia, because, I mean, everywhere I've moved just about, I have experiences, but nothing like Georgia.
Yeah, nothing like Georgia.
Nothing's ever compared to those. There's something is going down in Georgia.
It's all that moonshine you guys are drinking down there.
There you go. Now you're talking. I tasted it. Yeah, I tasted it.
So have I, man.
I'll tell you what, that stuff goes down kind of harsh, but it's smooth,
Make a ball drop.
Drinking gasoline.
Yeah, in a way, you kind of taste the smell of gasoline, but it's good. It's good. I mean, it comes in a milk bottle, plastic milk bottle, a gallon milk bottle. So,
it's spores now, but that kind of gross.
I had to try. I was in Georgia, and I told the guys, listen, while I'm in Georgia, I like to try some moonshine. They brought it over. That was pretty good. I have to admit, it was good.
Well, I declare, I'll get you some moonshine, son. What time is it, guy? My clock's
on. Yeah, we got a few minutes, couple minutes.
Yeah, John, tell us your name of your book and who's the dude that wrote it? There's some other dude that wrote it, I know, with you, right?
Yeah.
Artie Links.
My co-author is Bruce Stephan Holmes. He's in Santa Barbara right now with Timeless Voyager Press. You could find him in the internet. And the book is called Incident at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I'm on Amazon.com. You can find me there. I'm still working on finding someone who would be interested in conducting a documentary or a movie. That would be something. That would definitely be something, with all these military personnel being involved and a base where actions do happen, first line, because there's airborne training going on there, which I went through a little bit. didn't graduate with the airborne guys because the major told me I was too little. I was too little for airborne. So, but I went through the training. I went through the towers. You got three towers there, small, medium, and high. And I went through that training exercise, and just that the major told me I was a little bit too small. I got to be a little bit taller, about 5'11", 6 foot.
You went through the ultimate training, didn't you?
What's that now?
So you went through the ultimate training, didn't you, at Fort Benning?
Yeah.
It's a planetary training.
Right,
Starship Troopers.
Yeah, oh yeah, Starship Troopers. That's what he should have called all of us, you know, with all that stuff going on with us. Something new, maybe, I don't know. Maybe they're doing that right now. Because they
certainly a possibility.
Yeah, they got something going on every day. I mean, I'll tell you what, real quickly before we close here, is that after Fort Benning, I was sent to West Berlin, Germany, Berlin Wall Guard, Spandau Prison Guard also. I got to meet these two old guys in a yard, and my buddy was telling me, why don't you go down there and give them a pack of saline, and I'll tell you who they are. I said, all right, sure, no problem. Just two old guys in their late 80s. What are they going to do? Jump over the wall? I don't think so. The Russians wanted to shoot them right down on the spot. And I went downstairs and gave him some Salem cigarette pack and smoking. And then I went back to my buddy and I asked him, so what's the big deal on these two old guys? And he said, one's Rudolf Hess and the other one's Albert Speers. I said, no, can't be. He said, yeah.
Wow.
War prisoners.
Wow.
Still alive back then, still alive.
Okay.
In the late 80s, 89, 90, you know, 88, 89, still walking around. But that's not all that I went through when I was in Berlin, is that I had to go through a Head Start call, Head Start, to learn how to speak German, which I had to. And one day we got on a field trip and went to the east side, which is the Russians were checking our bus and the people were going to this museum. And we got to the museum and you see pictures everywhere of Russian people and the war and all these things and the uniforms. Their guide was a Russian officer. He spoke real good English. I mean, really good English. We asked him, where'd you learn how to speak English? And he says, Leningrad University. And I was like, whoa, this guy's good. Really good. He could pass on by like one of us. He kind of motioned us to go downstairs and see something, and all of us, there's 30 of us. And we went down the stairway, and when we got to the bottom of the stair, he was telling us to come over to the three glass casing, right? And we're talking to each other like, what is this guy trying to show us? And when we got real close to it, he pointed out Hitler, Goering, and Himmler. And we freaked out, all of us. We just said, no way. But you know what? Hitler was Hitler. You could see his face burnt a little bit on the left lip. His mustache was still there. And the giveaway was the way he combed his hair.
They were dead?
They were dead.
Oh,
his
man.
His eyes were slightly open. You know, dead people sometimes have their eyes open.
Yeah.
He was, yeah. He's,
Hitler's dead body.
Yeah, Hitler's dead body. There was no mannequin.
All right, well, John, let's end on that note. We'll start another story. We'll definitely have you on again sometime. That's a note to end on. It's been a pleasure, John. And we're definitely friend of the show, John Vasquez.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
all right.
Thank you very much, John.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a good night.
You too. Right, take
bye-bye.
Care, man. Bye.
All right.